Greetings. Welcome to Media Matters. I'm Bob McChesney, your host today on WILL 580 in beautiful Urbana, Illinois. Today we've got a special show. We have two guests from the community connected with the growth of the IMC, the Independent Media Center here in Urbana, and both who are connected really with the developments taking place both in the United States and globally with regard to IMCs. IMCs, or Independent Media Centers, are something that didn't even exist. It wasn't even in the dictionary as recently as 3 or 4 years ago. Now they're like kudzu spreading across the planet and changing the nature of media. And where are they going to go? How far are they going to go? What sort of influence can they have? What does it mean for all of us? Those are the issues we're going to take today with our guests. And I have here in the studio with me, joining me today, Sasha Meinrath and Danielle Chenoweth, both of Urbana. And a little background for our listeners, if I can, I'll start with you, Sasha. Mm-hmm. You're a grad student in psychology, mm-hmm. and then you have been working on the IMC here since its inception, is that right?
Yeah, since before it began, really.
Since before the creation. Mm-hmm. And that's how old is the IMC here in town?
We were founded officially, legally, on November 30th of 2000, but we really began meeting in late September of 2000.
So pushing 2 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Right up there. Okay.
We actually were meeting. Our first meeting was 2 days before September 26th, which is the day that there was international solidarity movements with the global justice protests in Prague. So we had local activities that were happening here, and we decided we wanted to cover them. So we gave ourselves 2 days to get our stuff together and to cover those protests, and that's kind of how it started.
The voice you just heard, that of Danielle Chenoweth, our other guest here in the studio. Danielle, you and Sasha are both like co-directors of the IMC, and you've both been involved, or on the board of directors, so let me get that right.
We're both on the board of directors, and we're co-founders.
Co-founders of the IMC, and you also work on the Urbana City Council. You're an elected member, is that right?
That's correct, for Ward 4.
For Ward 4. Which ward is that, for those of us who don't know our Urbana geography yet?
Well, it's your ward, and it's the ward of many professors and academic professionals and graduate students in the kind of West Urbana neighborhood area.
Mm-hmm. Okay. My ward. Well, very good. Glad that I'm well represented here. Let's talk about the IMC's independent media centers. Where did these start, Sasha? When did this thing develop?
Sure. Well, in 1999 in Seattle, there was a large gathering of World Trade Organization, WTO, people and representatives from throughout the world. And there was sort of a spontaneous gathering of anti-WTO protesters, or preferably called global justice protesters, who wanted to have issues like endemic poverty, the destructive elements of WTO policies brought to the table in terms of, you know, what is the WTO doing? And in response to this huge gathering of WTO representatives and global justice protesters, it was decided that there needed to be another outlet for media, for the coverage of what was going to be happening, in that it was expected and borne out, actually, as we saw in the media, that the perspective of the mainstream, the dominant media, would be very pro-WTO and very sort of lacking in sort of on-the-streets information and an in-depth analysis of why people were there. So a group of media activists got together and formed what became the first independent media center. And they did this by having people that were coming to town that wanted to cover this event sort of bring their skills, bring their equipment, and share it amongst people that were out on the streets. And they put up a website. It actually ended up receiving over 1 million hits over the course of 1 weekend, which is astronomical.
During the demonstrations against the WTO.
Right. It's a website that never existed, was put up, and then received over 1 million visitors. Unprecedented amount of interest in something that new. And from that, of course, we had people from all over the nation, actually all over the world, gathered there. And they brought this idea of, wow, if we all come together, we do grassroots, on-the-streets media reporting, we provide like a service and a perspective and in-depth analysis of what's happening there that simply wasn't being covered in the dominant media. And they brought this idea back to all of their communities all over the place.
Were either of you in Seattle?
Yeah, I was in Seattle, and I visited the Independent Media Center there. And actually, it's still in the same location, almost 2.5 years later. We had two people who ended up being also founders of the Independent Media Center here in town, Molly Stentz and Peter Miller, both of whom were able to get press credentials through that IMC. You just walk in, they give you press credentials. And they were able to produce stories there in the Independent Media Center and upload it. When they found out about this place, they immediately took me and other people. There was about 20 of us who went from this area to that protest in Seattle. And they took us to the Independent Media Center and said, hey, look, here's this place you can walk into and write a story. And it goes on this website and they're... And, you know, you can get your perspective out. And it was really
global
kind of amazing.
Right.
Immediate global distribution. And what was so interesting is I had the radio on while I was walking around the streets of Seattle as the police are having a riot, which is what they did, gassing people and pepper spraying peaceful people who are locked down in the streets. And as I heard one story, I would go to the Independent Media Center and I saw all of these other stories. And there was this simultaneity of one kind of spin that was really trying to delegitimate the protesters and show and try to say that they provoked this violence and they brought it on themselves and that there are these people who are terrorists in the streets of Seattle. And then this other perspective, which is much more focused on the issues that was coming out of the Independent mm-hmm. Media Center.
We're talking today with Sasha Meinrath and Danielle Shanawith, who just spoke about independent media centers and the media and the future of IMCs and the media. On Media Matters. This is a special pre-recorded version. We brought them into the studio shortly before we went on air so we could have a chance to get them both. So we aren't taking calls today, so please do not try to call and ask your questions. You will not get any human beings if you do that. Sit back, turn up the volume, relax, put your feet up, and listen to Sasha and Danielle as we talk about the IMCs here in Urbana and internationally. Now, going back to Seattle, I mean, it seems that right at the birth of the IMCs was a strong critique of the limitations of existing media. I mean, that stimulated the growth. If the existing media was doing a bang-up job of covering demonstrations, of covering globalization, covering the issues in a manner that people connected to IMCs were satisfied with, there wouldn't be such a need for the IMCs.
Absolutely.
But I mean, it's, you start with the problem is that the current media just aren't getting the job done. In terms of like globalization, since that is the spawning movement, and I think links so much of the IMCs today, sort of concerns about what's called global justice. What is the problem with conventional media? I mean, then we're going to talk about how IMCs can help address that. What is the weakness of the existing coverage of global trade deals or the World Trade Organization from your perspective?
Well, there's I think a couple of weaknesses. One just has to do with the fact that the media is owned by five corporations. It may be less at this point, you know, as the ticker tape goes by. It may be three or two at this point. And those corporations especially when it comes to trade issues and what so-called free market issues, they have a strong desire to promote trade liberalizations. So, of course, when they see a huge burgeoning international grassroots movement that is trying to preserve democratic structures which have been built over decades and decades in various countries to protect labor and environmental regulations, when they see that movement is bursting forth to kind of stand in the way of trade liberalization, which has been moved to the back door to international, oftentimes secret kind of goings on behind closed doors, like the World Trade Organization, they aren't going to have strong incentives to give a strong voice to those grassroots movements.
You know, I remember those 1999 demonstrations very well. I was living in Madison at the time. I just started teaching here. And what was striking was that there were almost no special reports on the cable news channels in prime time. Mm-hmm. And what was striking was that, you know, it was such an amazing demonstration by any traditional standards, 50,000 people sort of coming out of the woodwork. In many ways, it was sort of like R. Tiananmen Square. It's like, all of a sudden, what's going on here? This is such a shock. And all the media were there to cover it. You would have thought it would have been a natural. Whereas, you know, 4 months earlier, before in the summer of 1999, John F. Kennedy Jr., his plane crashed into the ocean, and the same cable news channels basically discontinued all coverage for 10 days, CNN, Fox News Channel, simply to cover looking for body parts and the families and sort of laments about the family history of this private citizen. It was treated as if the Messiah had come back or died or something.
Well, that drive towards market share and sensationalism, which are definitely intertwined, is also one of the main reasons, I think, why people are turning more and more towards independent news sources, in that, like, there isn't time in a newscast to get all the sensational stories in and do, you know, an in-depth job of covering any one event.
You're right. But this story in Seattle, going back to that, I mean, this is a great news story. This is a dramatic story. Mm-hmm. This is great visuals. This is one that meets your criteria.
That's what makes you suspicious, doesn't it? It makes you think this is something that people would really want to watch and know about. Why would they not cover it substantively? And they did to some degree. I've been to many global justice protests since in Washington, D.C. Sasha was in Quebec. Mm-hmm. I went to the D.C. protest recently in April. It was uneventful and not covered because the police didn't beat us, basically. So they did cover Seattle eventually when the police started going ape and beating people and gassing people madly. They covered those pieces, but they continued to leave out the reason why the protesters were on the ground, the history, the background.
Substantive arguments and issues that motivate people.
What you saw a lot of was, you know, the black bloc, and you heard about how they were throwing things at police. What you didn't hear about was things like the black bloc actually was one of the main groups of people that were clearing tear gas canisters from people behind the front lines. These are families. These are young kids. These are people that were just there to show solidarity, that didn't want to get hurt, and were being gassed by the police. And the black bloc, for the most part, were the people that were picking these things up and throwing them out of the crowds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And where is the one place you can throw it? Well, behind the police lines, which are cleared of everyone except for maybe the corporate news cameras.
Now, what if someone is in favor of the WTO? Mm-hmm. Hey, the WTO is a bang-up thing. I really like them, and mm-hmm. I really like globalization. And they came in and wanted to show their video in the IMC. What would happen to them, do you think?
We have never...
Not here in Urbana. I'm just curious. Start there. We'll get to you guys in a sec.
Right. We have actually been an open forum. We follow what's called open publishing system, which means that anyone can... you know, put their views and perspectives. Anyone can post video to our websites, things of that sort. And you can see this on, if you go to the Jerusalem indie media site, if you go to many of sort of the contentious areas where you see like pro and anti of whatever the argument or the discussion or debate is about, all posted together.
So the model is more one of like public access television,
absolutely,
which is open to any viewpoint, rather than a community radio station like WFT, where you're going to have some editorial direction given the sort of programming that's selected.
I think the only thing that I've seen taken off of independent media sites are direct targeted threats towards specific individuals to do violence, serious violence. Mm-hmm. So those things, and oftentimes I think the policy is that those are hidden rather than completely removed.
Go ahead, Sasha.
Yeah, there's actually a core group of, I think it's about 10 principles that every IMC that's officially affiliated with this network must abide by. And that's things like transparency, egalitarianism, support and caring communities, and open publishing. So this is if you are in an IMC that is part of this network, it is an open system.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, when you get to things like a newspaper or a radio show where there's a limit on how much time you can have things, there is going to have to be some editorial process. And the idea is that you create, again, a system where it allows people to give and to take, to discuss things, to come to a consensus decision as to what to have on that show or in that paper. And through those processes, one hopes to achieve sort of a more democratic media structure.
I'm Bob McChesney. You're listening to Media Matters today on WILL 580 from beautiful Urbana. My guests, Danielle Shenowith and Sasha Meinrath, were talking about independent media centers, IMCs, and we've just been talking about the origins of the movement in 1999 at the Seattle demonstrations against the WTO meeting. And now let's talk about Urbana. Let's talk about what's going on here in the community, what you've all been doing. First of all, if someone wants to check out the website, what do they have to type into their computer to get to it?
The easiest thing to do is to type in www.ucimc.org.
UCIMC.org.
That's Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center.
.org. Okay, and then just bookmark it or show up thereafter.
Make it your homepage.
Make it your homepage. There you go. And, okay, this started a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And this has emerged. I mean, when I travel around the country, everyone knows about this Urbana IMC. It's got a lot of buzz. It's really got a reputation as being one of the dynamic IMCs in the country. Tell me a little bit about it. It started in like 2000. Where is it located? What do you guys do? What are your activities? Who's involved? That sort of stuff.
Well, it started in my living room.
In Ward 4
beautiful Carl Park in beautiful Urbana, and we quickly outgrew my living room and had to look for a space. And I think we wanted to buy a building, actually. We knew that we wanted to establish ourselves in this town. Actually, it's interesting, Bob, because there's a longer history of independent media in this town than just the center. Mm-hmm. There used to be an alternative resource center in the Illinois Disciples Foundation. Mm-hmm. I was the director of that ARC, hired when I first came to town in 1995. And there is and it goes way back. It's a peace resource. There's a peace reading room with donated materials for several decades. Many, many people would give their books to this. And it closed down at one point a few years before we opened the IMC. At the same time that we were about to open the IMC, so we didn't have the alternative reading room anymore. Then the question was, the Octopus looked like it was going to go under. There was a lot of rumors that we were going to lose our independent weekly. And so we felt like there was this vacuum that's being created in this town. And we weren't, you know, if anyone in town is used to some of the local media here, particularly some of the more mainstream media, it's real difficult to, it's a bitter pill to swallow some days. And so we felt like we needed there to be an alternative here in this town. So it's interesting. A lot of people came together because that sense of a vacuum at this particular time, in addition to the support that we felt with this burgeoning independent media movement coming out of Seattle and then spreading throughout the United States and the world. So
you didn't buy a building, though, did you?
We didn't purchase a building. In fact, we still have
if we had the funding.
We're looking to buy a building.
We're going to get the
funding
in a second.
But we now have a space in downtown Urbana. It's at 218 West Main Street.
It's right at Ground Zero in Urbana. It's right in the Main
and Race.
I mean, you can't beat it for a location.
It's an old printing shop, and it's some of the cheapest space per square foot that you can find in downtown Urbana. And we did a hell of a remodeling job on it.
Yeah, it is an amazing space. It's a storefront there. And now, what do you do exactly? Do people sit around and talk about Seattle? I mean, what do you do in the IMC?
We do that, but we also do a lot of other things. Actually, one of the reasons why we've a reputation for being really dynamic is the fact that we've really branched out into many of the different mediums that I think encompass sort of news reporting. So we do everything from have a weekly radio show.
The radio show is on WFT, our local community station.
Mm-hmm. WFT at Monday.
90.1 FM.
From 5:30 to 6 every week. Mm-hmm. And we also do some video production. We're hoping to get that really jump-started here in the summer. We do a monthly newspaper. We obviously
The Public Eye.
The Public Eye, sure. We also do a lot of web application stuff. We run a wireless system. We host performances.
An empire here.
Yeah, I mean we're our own grassroots media
Rupert
conglomerate.
Pretty soon, Sasha, the way you're going here.
We have a great group of librarians. They're called the Radical Librarians and Anarchist Archivists. Mm-hmm. They meet every week on Wednesdays, and they scheme how to grow our collection. And they've done a great job of putting our collection, a lot of information about our collection, online. At our website.
How frequently is the website? How comprehensive is the website for those who have been there, and how frequently is it updated?
It's updated probably
twice a week.
The main page is updated, twice a week. The news is updated anytime anyone posts anything. It's real time news reporting. Like, you can go there, anyone can go there and publish stories, perspectives, viewpoints.
So, someone listening to this show, if they could just go on and post it, they wouldn't have to get permission from some central committee.
Absolutely not. And in fact, if they posted something to our website and the different editorial groups, either the radio group or the print group, saw something that looked interesting, we would probably contact that person and ask if we can use it on our radio show as a headline or maybe get them to develop the story a little further and do a print piece with it.
What if a lot of really boring people submit really boring stories and cram up your website? Is there like some editorial committee that picks what's the homepage, or that's the way it goes?
In the website, you can imagine, has sort of three columns. And the columns are divided into sort of links to other IMCs, the idea being that if you want to see what's going on elsewhere in the world, you can get to it quickly. There's sort of a features section, which is a collective of people decides what are we going to sort of really sort of focus in on. And this is usually always going to be either something of local importance, something mm-hmm. happening here locally, or something with strong local ties. And then third is then an open newswire, which is just any story. This is completely open. Anyone can post anything they want to it. And there's, you know, well, I should say within reason, there is a web use policy, which we then post and say, hey, you know, please don't send commercial messages to this thing. Please only post once. Don't post 15 of the same message, yeah. things like that. But again, it's this idea of complete transparency and complete grassroots. Anyone can join into the indie media website or the indie media movement.
How many people are submitting now, basically? Can you quantify the sort of
Most of the people who submit to the Newswire actually don't live in this area. A number of them are, you know, people have heard about us. They come to our website and they post things. Mm-hmm. We do have lots of, you know, we have good collaboration with St. Louis IMC. We help them get off the ground. We actually did some workshops with them. They sometimes post updates. They're about to buy a building. And so we'll get to know what's going on there. We have very close ties with Springfield IMC. Mm-hmm. We also did some consulting with them, helped them get off the ground. They'll post things. We work with Bloomington, Indiana. They're mm-hmm. trying to get an IMC off the ground. I don't think it's quite there yet, but they post because they don't currently have one. And then Chicago, from the very beginning, we had good ties. And we have very good ties with Madison as well. Mm-hmm. So we'll get some regional posting. And then there's just general people who float around all the IMCs and kind of post different things to those.
And the system seems to be working so far. I mean, it's not like a concern. It's taking off and it's doing well.
Mm-hmm.
How many folks in the community now come into the center and participate in any of these activities? You know, what's the sense? I mean, How deep are the roots into this community now?
Right. Last time we tried to do a sort of a head count of people that are sort of actively involved, being in there at least once a week doing something, it was between about 75 and 100 people, which is a lot of people. But there's also about...
That's incredible.
Yeah.
It really is amazing.
All volunteering their time. We don't have paid staff. We're all 100% volunteer. This is for the entire global network, actually, is mm-hmm. true. People that sort of help out a little bit every once in a while expands that obviously to a much mm-hmm. larger number.
Well, that's a lot. Well, we're talking to Sasha Meinrath and to Danielle Chenoweth about the Urbana Independent Media Center located in downtown Urbana. And just the broad IMC movement that's been taking place in the last 3 years. These have sprung up all over the country and the world. And this is a pre-recorded show. We got Danielle and Sasha in the studio shortly before we went on air to get them together. So don't try to call them. Just sit back and listen here to Media Matters today. Let's get a handle on this global. Let's go back to Urbana a second. First, let's talk about the growth nationally and internationally to put it in context. As you've already referred to several other IMCs in the area. How many of these IMCs are there now?
There are 82 IMCs in 35 countries, including South Africa, Palestine, and Chiapas, Mexico.
And how many of those 82 roughly are in the United States, do you think?
About 30 of them are in the United States.
So the majority are outside the U.S.
Mm-hmm. And what's also important is that there's, you know, these are IMCs that have gone through the process, that have pledged to be like open and democratic systems.
Commandments or ground rules or whatever
right.
that have been laid out.
Not commandments, but yeah, the principles of unity, they're called. Okay. And have a collective that's operational and functioning and have a website that's up and functioning. There's also another several dozen IMCs that are sort of in the waiting list. I actually work with the new IMC, a global group of folks that's helping to get new IMCs up and running. And there's several dozen more that are sort of going through the process right now. And then there's scores of other groups. It's like a couple of people that say, we would like to do this. We're now looking in our local community to see if we can do this.
And basically when you start an IMC, let's say I lived in Decatur. I mm-hmm. want to start an IMC. I got together some friends. You'd basically just want to find a place to meet maybe or someone's living room in the short term. And then you'd start a website and basically mm-hmm. you'd start posting. And at the core of it, the core operation is a website where stuff can be posted.
Right.
Anyone at all, but especially people in the community.
Mm-hmm. That's the case for most IMCs. I actually feel like our core is more has to do with our space and less to do with our website. But many IMCs only exist in the virtual realm.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you that because you do have this wonderful space. And I know you're doing lots of meetings for community activities. It's really mm-hmm. become a community center in many ways.
Yes, absolutely.
That's the hope. And we also do a number of shows. In fact, many people in town know us because we have great music shows, you know, four or five times a week. Anything
four or five times a week?
This spring it's been absolutely crazy, but we have punk shows, we have folk shows, we have rock shows.
Do you charge theater for these shows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do.
All right. How about,
get a cut. I'm looking at Sasha because he's our treasurer.
I don't think we're allowed to give prices over the air. I think I get in hot water whenever I do that. But just so people shouldn't go there expecting to get in for free. Though,
right. No, we charge.
But they ought to just come down and check it out. I mean, that's absolutely a fair statement that it's just walk-in policy.
It's a friendly, open environment.
Now, the 7,500 people you say come in on a weekly basis, mm-hmm. in or out at one time or another, how much is that? Pretty stable group of people, or are there new people coming in, old people leaving? Yes, both.
We have the way our IMC works, and again, I think this is one of the reasons why we've been successful, is we have what's a structure of working groups, which are sort of people that come together and say, we want to do this. So we have a group that says, we want to have shows at the IMC, we want to have performances at the IMC. It's a group of now, it's about a dozen people that come in, meet every week, and do everything having to do with that aspect of it. We have another group that's running our monthly newspaper, The Public Eye, and they get together once a week and do sort of that project. Danielle is very involved in this news group, which is doing the radio show as well as doing things for national syndication. And they all get together again every week and do sort of their thing. And what this allows for is people to say, like, I want to be involved and here's what I want to do. And either we'll say, well, you can join this group and do that, or we'll say, you can form your own group and do this. And it's really this idea of inclusivity, of mm-hmm. saying, like, okay, if you want to make this happen and it's about making media, like, we will get you the resources, we will get you the skills, we will find people that also want to make this happen.
Now, I know that both of you are very skilled with computers, with software. I mean, mm-hmm. both of you professionally work in that area. So mm-hmm. What if someone's a complete knucklehead, they can barely turn on their computer, but they sort of want to get involved. Well, tell the truth. Are they going to come in and feel like they're a real moron?
Well, one of the main ways that people get involved with the Independent Media Center is to staff the space to help keep it open. And those people are involved in just kind of keep – and everyone who's come through the IMC has staffed at some point.
So they don't have to be operating.
Keep it open, keep it clean, you know,
computer code.
Show people how to get on the computer, which basically involves turning it on. But, you know, I work – that's a real good question because I work with news production. And I would say one of the biggest challenges that we face here at the IMC is just, you know, technical leaps to get to the point where you can produce something that's high enough quality mm-hmm. to, say, syndicate it nationally for free speech radio news or something, but also without, you know, requiring people to be experts to do that. Now, that's a big task. How do you get people mm-hmm. to produce for radio, but not necessarily have to know everything?
So someone could actually come in and sort of learn this stuff then.
So absolutely. We have a couple of machines, and one of the things that I'm really – this is like my – I'm real devoted to it right now is I'm interested in helping people, and particularly I focus on women because I feel like women and girls really feel scared in front of equipment. So there's different people who do training, and I'm always – has my eye out for – a woman who might come in and is interested in producing a show, and I'll sit with her, and the two of us together will work through the show. I will be the producer, and she will be the reporter, mm-hmm. and I will, as I'm producing the show, teach her the ins and outs of producing radio. Mm-hmm. We also have really good documentation. We have little guides, audio production guides, and things like that lying around, so mm-hmm. it helps people.
Right. And we provide weekly, every week, we provide free audio classes to teach people these skills. Mm-hmm. So anyone that has an interest in this, we will teach them. You don't have to come in having the knowledge ahead of time. You just have to come in and say, I want to do this, and we'll find a way to make that happen.
What are some of the big stories – or not big – some of the stories that you've carried on the website about local issues or politics that maybe haven't shown up, you know, in the last few months? It seems to be here in June, but anytime in the last few months that haven't maybe gotten as much treatment or got a different type of treatment from the other – news media in town.
Well, I think one that helps illustrate, I think, the differences in perspectives of news coverage is there was a story that came out a couple months back in the News Gazette talking about a major polluter here in town. And it was told from the point of view of that company's lawyers mm-hmm. and saying – basically blaming the residents of the community for the pollution that was affecting their lives, their houses, saying basically that because people didn't park their cars, you know, in such a way, or didn't wash their cars enough, that's why, you know, their cars were now getting, like, eaten alive by this pollution. That story came out the same day as the public eye for that month came out, carrying a story about this polluter from the point of view of residents.
Mm-hmm.
And saying, like,
who wrote that story?
One of our writers. Yeah, there's a collective. I believe that was Lindsay.
Lindsay Robinson. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, Public Eye, just to interrupt from what I'm saying, though, that's run differently. That's not pure public access, though, right? So if, like, some neo-Nazi walked in and said, I want to do my racial theory on the front page of Public Eye, you'd say, take a hike.
I mean, probably, yep.
They could post that on the website, theoretically.
Unless they targeted specific people, in which case it would be taken off.
Yeah.
Decisions about that are made by the group that is involved in the public eye. So it's collectively done, collectively run. One aspect of IMCs is that they have a commitment to egalitarianism, to social justice, to non-discrimination. So in this case, I mean, you've obviously put forward a very extreme example. But, you know, our IMC specifically, one of its strong commitments is to not discriminating against folks. We figure there's enough of that in this world.
Yeah. No, I didn't mean to suggest everyone uses Nazis as the extreme example. There are probably much better ones. But we're talking with Sasha Meinrath and Danielle Chenoweth today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Thank you for tuning in. We aren't taking calls today. This is a pre-recorded show, so just sit back and enjoy the rest of the show. You know, Public Eye has politics just like you described, very progressive politics, critical. Definitely wouldn't confuse it with the afternoon newspaper that's delivered in this town. What if your politics aren't – let's say you're a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are you going to go into the IMC and feel like out of place? You're both open access, but you're also serving a need that's not filled by the mainstream. At some point, there's sort of a disconnect there. I mean,
I think there's a difference between public access and community access in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And community access means that a community makes, the community contributes, the community supports it. So you could say the same thing about WEFT here in town, or even WILL, or any media source that's kind of more community-based rather than corporate-based is going to reflect in a lot of ways its history and the people who have supported it. And there is a kind of culture. There's no doubt about that. So I think that there's a culture behind the Independent Media Center having come out of the global justice movement that's very much focused on a number of progressive issues that involve, you know, anti-oppression work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you're going to see that bent. Now, I know that there are people who are involved with the IMC that are more kind of libertarian. There are people who are a little bit more, there are people who are, you know, working with faith-based groups, etc. So there's definitely variation. But I think generally the kind of work that we do currently is on the progressive end of the scale.
I'd also point out that the goal of indie media is to provide an alternative to dominant press.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, some people may argue, oh, you know, the press is, you know, inherently biased in the liberal vein. I think most folks in town would not argue that we have this preponderance of liberal press in town. They would probably say quite the opposite.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So in some ways, IMCs exist in opposition to a more sort of centrist or conservative press simply because there isn't that role being filled in, especially locally, but also sort of across the spectrum.
Well, let's turn to a five-letter word that can't help but come up because I'm sure you both think about it all the time, money. You got to pay bills. You got to pay your rent. You've got to pay for equipment. I mean, and the only way so far in this 40 minutes we've spoken, the only time you're raising money is getting a cut out of tickets to the rock bands, pretty much. That's not going to pay the bills, even if you're not paying for labor. I mean, you know, this is how do you guys raise money to pay for your bills? I mean, and what's the long-term thinking? Can you survive basically with whatever you're currently doing?
Well, one thing I want to say is that when somebody, and then Sasha, our treasurer, can say a lot about how we pay our bills,
because
we do a good job of this. But we started, and I think organizations are very successful starting with this mentality, which is if I can find 10 people who are going to pay $50 a month for a year, then let's open a space for a year and see if we can use that as kind of a stepping stone to get more funding, and then use that funding as a stepping stone to get other funding. So we did that, and the result was that many more than 10 people stepped forward, and maybe Sasha can detail
that.
That's
a $600 a year. That's a serious commitment. That's pretty impressive.
We had 10 people like that. No problem in this town.
Yeah, I think at last, I mean, we basically said if you can donate a couple of bucks a month, we would love that. If you can donate 50 bucks a month, we would obviously love that too. We ended up having, I think, over 50 people say, I will commit for at least a year, a certain amount of money per month.
So based on that, you went out and got the building. This sort of
based on that, we went out and got the building.
And we got a much nicer building than we originally thought we'd get.
Right. And you know, that enabled us basically to have the freedom to know that, oh, we have funding for a set amount of time. Now let's do what we wanted to do.
Okay. And is that going to be the model for funding from here on out? I mean, what's the thinking? What's the thinking for what you can do to pay the bills?
We're doing a variety of different things. Everything from we're now a nonprofit.
You're not going to sell ads, obviously. That's not part of the plan.
We don't sell ads in the public eye, no.
And it's just a non-commercial institution entirely. Right. Mm-hmm. So that which is the normal option for a media to make money.
Right. Except we actually, ads. I think, have a business model that I think in the progressive community, money is a dirty word, and as a result, a lot of people struggle with it. And I think we've been pretty smart to not feel like money's a dirty thing. We want money. We want enough money to survive. We don't want to make a profit. We don't want to, our board of directors make out as bandits. But we want dough. And the situation is we set up something where roughly, we've tweaked it a little bit. If somebody does something to bring in money to the IMC through doing radio for Free Speech Radio News, it's, you know, we get a certain quantity of money for every feature. IMC gets half, producer gets half. Mm-hmm. Somebody brings in a video showing, charges $2, about Seattle or something, charges $2 a head, they get half, IMC gets half.
So you have a set policy on that?
So we generally have this way that actually provides an incentive for people who are a little, you know, maybe hurting for dough but are involved with the IMC already to try to initiate some things and
So the operating philosophy is that you'll never have paid staff. It's always going to be purely volunteer
labor.
We
may eventually have
paid staff.
Is there paid staff at other IMCs?
Not yet.
Because it seems like you're going to reach a limit if you don't have a paid staff at a certain point.
I want a news coordinator. Mm-hmm. I want a news coordinator. I'll pay him, her. That's what I want.
And personally? I mean.
I want a personal coordinator who can organize my life.
No. I meant personally pay them.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean.
I've come close to that, but no, I'm hoping the IMC. Actually, I helped finish a grant to try to get some funding for a news coordinator, so. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm hoping that we can do something like that.
I don't think there is a general feeling that, having paid staff is a horrible thing. Obviously, when we do have paid staff, we want to be able to pay them a living wage. We want to be, on the up and up in terms of, providing for the people that work for us. We view that as sort of a next logical step in sort of maturing as an organization. Mm-hmm. And the question, of course, becomes how do we fund that again? And it's sort of we have a lot of things in place. To get funding, we're a small grassroots nonprofit organization that's looking. I mean, our entire annual budget is $25,000, less than that. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine, small amounts of money go an incredibly long way.
It's striking when you look at what you've accomplished for that amount of money. That's getting a lot of bang for the buck. So
I've always said that grassroots organizations can do so much with so little. And, I also work in the business world, and I see how much money goes into such little effort. And then I look at all the grassroots organizations I work with, and it's amazing the productivity of people in grassroots organizations who care about what they're doing and what they're able to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the international IMCs. It's one of the striking things about the indie media movement is that it is truly a global movement. It's not an export. It's not based out of Hollywood or New York, but in fact, it's all over the world.
Absolutely.
What are some of the are they all in English or are they all languages?
No, they're in pretty much whatever language the people that are doing that in whatever city or country wants to put it in. So we have things in Arabic and obviously in most of the Romance languages and Korean and just you name it, it's out there. If people are doing it,
they're in every continent now.
Except Antarctica, yeah.
Except Antarctica. Okay, well, there's something for someone to do. Have some free time to kill. And the Jerusalem IMC in the last month or two has gained a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. What's going on there?
Well, obviously, you know, with the reoccupation of many cities by Israeli forces, there's been an extreme need of coverage of what's happening there. I mean, one of the first things that the Israeli forces did was kick out the press. So who was left to cover this were people on the streets, were the citizens, were the people that lived there. And obviously, indie media became immediately like an outlet for these sorts of viewpoints, perspectives. We're talking about like photos and videos and audio recordings that were standing in marked opposition to what, you know, the dominant rhetoric was about what was happening there.
If only, imagine if there had been an IMC at the beginning of the war on terror. You know, imagine that if there had been an IMC in Afghanistan. I think one of the reasons that we're actually seeing what's going on in Israel and Palestine is because some of those images are coming out, and we just didn't have that. I mean, the BBC was probably the only people on the ground in Afghanistan.
If you go to the Jerusalem IMC, which is, if you just go to indiemedia.org, you can click your way through. It's anyone can do it.
There's Palestine and there's Jerusalem IMC, and it's interesting to go to both
Israel
of them.
There's Israel IMC also.
And I think right now, actually, we outfitted a person who came through town with a mini disc recorder. He went to Palestine. He's in Palestine right now, and he's reporting back to our independent media center here with stories of Palestine.
Who's that?
His name's Andrew. And I don't remember his last name, although I went to college with him. But we recently, a couple months ago, did a story on the D.C. protests in the anti-war protests, which were really a large part of that was the pro-Palestinian march and pro-Palestinian movement.
And this is back in April.
Back in April. And we got a couple of different I was interviewing people in the street, and I found people who had just come back from Palestine. And I did extensive interviews and ended up mostly people from Jewish organizations who were standing in solidarity with Palestinians who were doing human rights work in Palestine. And did a bunch of different interviews, put something together, and did a 29-minute piece on that, and uploaded that to Palestine IMC and our local IMC as well. Mm-hmm. So some of the – it's interesting. People's bodies aren't all – you know, not everyone who's reporting for Palestine IMC is in Palestine or is Palestinian. There's really – I mean, that's why I think of us as a – we are a globalized movement. Mm-hmm. This is the kind of globalization I want to see.
It's a very much a network then too. So you just sort of – stuff goes all over through the network pretty quickly. Any idea how many hits the Jerusalem or Palestine IMCs get on
the
a daily basis?
The last time I talked with them, they were saying that they were getting about 600,000 a week.
And how's their – to go to locally, how's the local IMC doing in Hicksville?
We're not nearly as exciting.
I would expect you –
well, we don't have a war up
there,
luckily.
Let's hope we don't have a war here unless, you know, you convince the Urbana City Council to declare war in Champaign, I think.
We get about 15,000 to 20,000 hits a week.
That's pretty impressive. That's really impressive, actually, I think, for a community that says – and you don't know where – can you tell where they're coming from?
We don't log ISPs due to the government attempting to get these from several IMCs, following some postings that were on Indie Media's websites. But we do know sort of referral pages, and they're coming from all over the world.
We're talking today with Sasha Meinrath and Danielle Chenoweth about the IMC movement, Indie Media Centers, and the Urbana Indie Media Center. We've been sort of all over the waterfront today talking about what they've been up to. And, you know, it seems like the local Indie Media Center is really part of a much broader movement. We've talked about you doing the radio show on WFT, the community station. And the radio, what goes, Danielle, you're involved with the radio show. What sort of programming is on that program? What do you cover there?
Well, we try to focus on local issues, and basically every week on Sundays at 1:15, whoever walks in the door and wants to help produce radio, we sit down, and we are the editorial board, and we come up with stories, and usually we've been gathering stories throughout the week, so what people do is they come to the table on Sunday for our Monday show and say, this is what I have. We know a month in advance who's the producer. There's a different producer each week. And so actually there's quite a bit of variation.
Who's responsible for that show?
The producer is the person who's responsible for that show.
Like Ben Scott, the producer of this show. I always forget to thank, but I'm doing so right now.
Except if Ben was you and also him back in the booth, that would be the kind of – so we don't have the luxury of having hosts and producers and reporters and all that. Usually we kind of have one producer who's doing it all. And we've focused on things like Sasha had mentioned the local polluter story. We focus on local government issues. We also do series. I'm really happy when we're able to come back to things, because that's something that oftentimes the mainstream news likes to, you know, when somebody's bleeding, they'll cover it, but all the other background information and the follow-up isn't covered.
So it's all local news, it's local issues,
yeah,
basically.
So we've focused particularly on the issue of race in the school systems in Champaign and Urbana, but particularly Champaign with the turnover of the school board. There really was a coup here about a year ago, and we've been following the stories of that and the kind of grassroots movement of people in this town who are trying to get the school district to wake up and realize that African-American children aren't really being served.
Mm-hmm. And the show, again, just so we get it out there, is Monday nights from 5:30 to 6 on WFT if people want to tune in.
It's called IMC Radio News. And actually, if you don't have to just tune in, you can show up and produce news for us. In fact, people walk in and they say, well, I'm not really a journalist, I'm not really a reporter, but, you know, there's this thing that's happening, you know, that's coming up, and I want to be able to cover it. There's going to be somebody in town who's, you know, who's a war resister with the Israeli army, and I want to cover it. And we'll take them usually right then and there, pull them into the back, teach them how to use a mini disc recorder, send, you know, check it out to them, send them out in the field. They come back next week, and we say, what do you have? We look at it, and the producer helps kind of cut it down and put it on the air for the next show. So we're also looking for reporters.
Okay. Fortunately, we don't live in a police state, but if we did live in a police state, as so many countries in the world are today, and you had an IMC, the sort of coverage you're talking about could get you in a lot of trouble with the government.
Well, you don't even have to live in a police state. I mean, Italy IMC, several Italy IMCs were recently raided by state officials, by the police, who confiscated their media, like their servers and their hard drives and stuff, saying, you guys got a lot of really important information during the Genoa stuff, showing like what the police were doing and breaking international law and shooting to death, in this case, one of the protesters.
This is when the G8 met in Genoa, Italy.
Right.
Yeah.
And they swept in and they took out everything.
And they beat people up. They beat them up. There was blood all over the walls. There was a lot of documentation they didn't get of the IMCistas, as we like to call them, with their, you know, with their laying on the floor after the police had raided the place. It was really devastating. So, you know, some people call Italy a democracy. Some people call this place a democracy. You know, you never know when you're telling truths that are unpopular.
That's right. The point you're getting at, these things aren't just fun and games to learn how to play with a tape recorder. If you're going to cover some stories, you know, you're getting some pretty serious business.
Right.
And so a lot of these IMCs are you know, faced with the threat of violence and harassment. How about, I would imagine a place like Chiapas or some of these other places where they're operating, it must not be any picnic.
Chiapas, there's also, we're working to set up an IMC in Iraq and one in China, which you can imagine now has to be virtual. It can't be in vivo and has to have a lot of security.
It has to be virtual. It can't be
in vivo, like live. I mean, it can't be people meeting. I mean, you can imagine how quickly that would get broken up.
Yeah.
But it also requires a lot of security measures because, in this case, posting can get you killed. And so there's definitely a move to have things like Chiapas IMC reporting from the point of view of the people that want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
We've been working with Chiapas to get funding so that they can hire a full-time media coordinator down there who can be there and say, look, I will, you know, make sure that what we're doing is above board, and, you know, we'll help people to produce news in a place where it's very dangerous to do that.
This is a question for both of you. As you look down the road 5, 10, 15 years, what do you think the things are that could really the problems that could kill off IMCs or really slow them down, retard them? What are your concerns when you wake up in the morning saying, oh, this is something I'm worried about? What are the problems that you really think that could derail this movement?
Well, I worry about the IMCs, and that's what you do when you love something. You worry about it. I worry about them becoming in each area of kind of insular communities that aren't really reaching out to the community and pulling in new faces. I worry about them becoming very demographically homogenous, mostly white, mostly male, particularly because the focus is on technology. That's that danger. I also know the IMCs have done a good job around the world of not being that, but I've seen, you know, the pressures of you know, of kind of institutionalized sexism and racism and classism come to bear in every environment, even progressive environments. So that's something that I think we always have to look out for. I you know, one of the things I've seen already kill IMCs, I know the Springfield IMC has really struggled with when, you know, people, and we've struggled with this, people having such a strong ownership over their projects, because when you're not getting compensated monetarily, your compensation is that you have a sense of ownership mm-hmm. over something. And that's good. You should. If you do work, you should get recognition and you should have a sense of place and ownership. At the same time, this is an organization that always has to keep its doors open and be broad and open. And that means they have to let go sometimes. So at our general membership meeting, I recently asked the people who have been core members of the IMC, I said, I want everyone to be appreciated for the work that we've all done, and I want every single person who considers themselves a core member of our IMC to take a month sabbatical sometime in the next year. Just get out of here. Mm-hmm. Leave. Go do something else. And then come back, and you'll have a sense that things will have gone on without you, and you will know that this organization can exist without you. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the challenges with lots of organizations, including the IMC.
Yeah. Sasha?
And I agree with everything Danielle said. I also, in direct pragmatic money, is obviously a major issue. 50% of our operating budget goes to rent. Doesn't build equity in our organization at all. Things like that, getting a building, building an endowment, having the ability to take risks because we know that it won't bankrupt the entire organization if that one thing fails. I think long term we need to branch out and be doing more projects in the community. We need to be building stronger coalitions.
We've only got a few seconds left. I mean, what's your hunch? 5-10 years from now, are IMCs going to be much larger than they are now, or is this, have they peaked? Are they close to peaking?
I've seen interest only increase. If anything, one worry would be that it's growing so fast.
Danielle, last word.
Well, I think our independent media center in 5 to 10 years, we're going to own our own building and we're going to be a lot more of a community center and be really reaching out in the community more. Internationally, I don't know. As long as we have a corporate media that's owned by such a small number of people, we're still going to have a need for IMCs.
Danielle Chenoweth, Sasha Meinrath, I'd like to thank you both for coming down to the studio today and talking to us about the Urbana Indie Media Center.
Thank you.
I'm Bob McChesney, your host. I'd like to thank Ben Scott, my wonderful producer, and I'll see you next week with another episode of Media.